أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين، واللعن الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين. Dear viewers, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. In our last session, I gave a picture of what cultural relativism says about the nature of goodness. I pointed out that according to this school of thought, X is good if it is approved by the society. And the same X is bad if it is disapproved and rejected by the society. I also explained the reasons and justifications they presented for their claim. For example, they were appealing to social sciences, saying that social science supports their claim. In other words, the social science says that whatever is approved by the society, it is good, and whatever is disapproved by the society, then it is bad. They also were saying that if you want to accept cultural relativism, go and visit different parts of the world. This will help you understand the essence of the theory presented by this school of thought. Third, they were saying that if you accept cultural relativism as your moral school of thought, then it will increase your tolerance towards other religions, towards other schools of thought. And tolerance is the demand of time. And nowadays, we need tolerance a great deal. And fourthly, they were saying that if you accept cultural relativism as your school of thought, you will be able to support morality, and you will be able to develop a positive outlook towards morality. Because after accepting this school of thought, you will look at morality as something that is supported by the majority of the society. And when you accept something as morality, you imply that it is accepted by the majority of the society. So morality is the voice of the majority. And being a reflection of the voice of majority, it is acceptable. So if you accept this school of thought, it will help you to develop a positive approach towards morality. These were some of the arguments that were presented by this school of thought. Today, inshallah, God willing, we will assess the theory presented by this school of thought critically. And we want to evaluate this theory to find out whether or not it is good to accept. There are different objections that are raised against the theory of this school of thought. The first obvious objection that is raised against this school of thought is that if you accept this school of thought, you will not be able to make any criticism of anything. In other words, the moment you accept cultural relativism, the door to criticism will be blocked. The way to criticism will be blocked. And you will not be able to criticize anything. So, since we need criticism, since we need healthy criticism, therefore we cannot accept this school of thought. Because this school of thought is against any sort of criticism, against any sort of objection. And since we need objection for further development, and since we need criticism for getting corrected, therefore we cannot agree with the idea of this school of thought. You might say, what will happen if criticism does not exist? Let's say criticism is very bad. Let us try to bring about a friendly atmosphere. A friendly atmosphere may not be an atmosphere in which criticism exists. So why should we emphasize on the existence of criticism and objections? I would like to say that criticism is very much important. If you want to improve, if you want to further develop, then you need to have criticisms. You need to have others criticize you. Because if they criticize you, then you will be able to find out your defects. You will get familiar with your flaws. And you will try to remove these flaws and defects and get closer to perfection. All this can be facilitated. All this can be achieved only if you accept criticism, if you welcome criticism. But if you are opposed to criticism, if you dislike objections, then of course you will not come to know about your defects, you will not come to know about your difficulties and problems. And as long as you have not come to know about these problems, then how can you improve? How can you succeed? How can you go ahead? All this can be done when you understand and when you know about your defects and flaws. So the first criticism is that if one accepts this school of thought, it will be tantamount to rejecting any kinds of criticism and objections. And since we need objections, since we are in need of criticisms, especially if they are healthy, therefore we cannot agree with this school of thought. Another objection that can be raised against this school of thought is that if you accept this school of thought, the result will be very catastrophic. The result will be very bad. Why? Because there are certain norms that are accepted by certain societies. If social approval is equal to goodness, then all these social norms must be good. For example, fascism is a social norm. It was once widely practiced and accepted. If social approval is the sign of being good, then fascism must be good. Racism is also another phenomenon. It was once practiced. It was once accepted. And if social acceptance is the sign of being good, then racism must be a good thing. And we must encourage others to go towards accepting this social norm. But, of course, nobody can agree with this. Nobody can say that racism is good. Nobody can say that fascism is good. Yes, if this school of thought is an accepted school of thought, then things such as racism, fascism, and even slavery must be a good thing. Because once slavery was practiced internationally, it was a prevailing custom, a prevailing tradition, though it no longer exists. But nobody can now agree with such phenomena, and nobody can confirm such kind of things. So this is the another objection that we can raise against this school of thought. The third objection is that there is no mutual relation between social approval and goodness. This school of thought claims that there is a mutual relation between the two. The moment there is social approval, there is goodness. And the moment there is goodness, there is social approval. But on the contrary, we claim and we believe that there is no mutual relation, there is no necessary relation between social approval and goodness. There are cases where social approval does exist, but there is no sign of goodness. And there are instances where goodness does exist, but there are no signs of social approval. So we cannot say that they are interrelated with each other. One can imply the other. Instead, we can claim that they are not related to each other. For example, maybe you can assume for a while a society that is addicted to smoking, a society that is used to smoking. If a society is used to smoking, then you can say that smoking is what the society approves of. There is the social approval behind smoking. But can you infer from this social practice and from this social approval that smoking is good? Never. There is a social approval, but from this social approval we cannot conclude that goodness is good. Goodness is there. Similarly, there are other traditions. For example, gambling. Maybe you can assume again for a while a society that is used to gambling. And you can assume a society that is loving gambling. So here again, gambling is a tradition that is practiced by the society and that is favored and liked by the society. But from this social approval, we cannot conclude that gambling is good. So what we want to say is that there is no mutual relation between social approval and goodness. Because according to the examples I presented, we find cases where social approval is there, but there is no goodness. On the other hand, you can find examples of good things which are not socially approved. There are many good things. And there are things that are very much positive, but unfortunately they are not accepted by certain societies. So, to conclude, we must say that there is no mutual relation between these two. The fourth objection that I want to present is that this school of thought claimed that social science supports this school of thought. Social science says that social approval is equal to being good. But according to the objection I'm raising now, we say that social science, on the contrary, is opposed to social approval. In other words, social science accepts social approval as one of the stages of moral development. But it does not say that it is the only stage that exists. For example, Lawrence Colin Berg, a social scientist, says that social approval is the fourth stage of moral development. The first stage is being punishment, reward, and parental approval. These are the three stages that precede the social approval. But social approval is not the only stage that is available. You can go beyond this stage, and beyond this stage you can find utilitarian approach. Of course, if you are more mature, if you get more, if you get further educated, you will be able to understand what utilitarianism says, and you might be actually encouraged to support this school of thought. So this school of thought was claiming that social scientists are supporting them. But we say no, social scientists are not supporting you. Social scientists are against you. Because according to social scientists, social approval is only the fourth stage, and it is not the last stage. And people will not be stopped here. They will go further, and they will go beyond this stage. So that is the fourth objection that we can raise. Yet there is another objection, the fifth objection that we can raise against this school of thought. To assess it critically, we must ask this school of thought that, okay, according to you, everything must be relative. And everything is relative to every society, and nothing is absolute. So let us ask a question from you. Is your theory of cultural relativism relative or absolute? Is your idea relative or absolute? If you say that your theory of cultural relativism is also relative, then it will be of no use, because it will agree with cases wherein absolutism holds. It will not negate cases where absolutism is available. But if you say that our theory of cultural relativism is absolute, then we would say that it will be actually a counterexample for your own idea. If everything is relative, then how your theory is absolute? And your theory will break this instance will break your theory. And your theory will be broken, and it will not be accepted. So this is a very strong argument. And if we think upon this argument, if we ponder further on this argument, you will understand that this school of thought is a self-contradictory school of thought, because it must accept either it is an absolute theory or a relative theory. If it says that it is a relative theory, then it will be useless. It will be of no use. And if it says that it is an absolute theory, then we should say that this theory actually contradicts its own self, and it is not harmonious. So that is the fifth objection that we raised against this school of thought. But now let us look at Islam. What does Islam say in this regard? Does Islam agree with cultural relativism? Does Islam support cultural relativism? The answer is a negative. Islam does not agree with cultural relativism. The propositions, the sentences presented by Islam are absolute. They are not issued for a specific place or for a specific moment. حلال محمد حلال إلى يوم القيامة. What is legalized by Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him? What is made lawful by Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him? It will remain lawful until the day of resurrection. In حرام محمد حرام إلى يوم القيامة. What is forbidden by Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, will be forbidden till the day of resurrection. There will be no change in Islamic laws. There will be no change in Islamic legislations. And that is why we say that Islam has prescribed, for example, prayers 5 times a day. It is prescribed not for a specific group or for a specific location. It is prescribed for all human beings, whether male or female, whether white or black, whether Asians or Europeans. It is not limited to a particular area, limited to a particular people. It includes all peoples, all generations, in all colors. Similarly, Islam has made Hajj compulsory. It is one of the obligations of every Muslim to go on Hajj at least once in one's lifetime. Again, it is a universal obligation. It is not restricted to a particular group or a particular race or a particular area. It is universal. It is inclusive. It includes all people, all groups, all sexes. But of course, there is relativism in Islam in a specific sense, which I'm going to describe. For example, Islam says that you should offer 4 units prayer every day. But if you are on a journey, you can shorten your prayer. Instead of offering 4 units, you can suffice to offering 2 units. So here Islam has actually considered some sort of decreased the burden of the duty. Similarly, Islam has done the same in regard with fasting. It is obligatory for every Muslim to fast. But if you are ill, or if you are on a journey, then you can break your fast. And then you can compensate for it. You can fast at other time to compensate for what you have done. But you see kind of concisions are there. And you can say that it is a kind of relativism, but this relativism is quite different from what the cultural relativists say. Cultural relativists say that it is the location that matters. It is the geography that matters. It is the people that matter. They are emphasizing on elements such as people and location. But Islam never tells you such kind of things. Islam says that all obligations are for all Muslims. But these all Muslims, if there are certain conditions, if they face these conditions, then they can actually change their obligations. And this changes again is not restricted to a particular type of people. This changes for all human beings who are Muslims can make use of this change and can make use of this concision. Anyone who falls ill can make use of this concision. Anyone who goes on a journey can make use of this concision. So this concision is not limited to a particular area or to a particular people. So these are the things that are told by Islam. To conclude my speech today, I should again say that according to what I said today, cultural relativism is not acceptable because there are a number of objections that can be raised against this school of thought. These objections are enough to reject this school of thought. In order to briefly mention these objections, I should once again say that if you accept this school of thought, you will not be able to issue any sort of criticisms and objections. And if you are not able to raise objections, there will be no chance for improvement. There will be no chance for development. Since improvement and development are things that are favored by all, therefore we cannot accept this school of thought. The second objection that was raised was that there is no mutual relation between social approval and being good. The third objection that was raised is that if this school of thought is accepted as a correct school of thought, then we must have a positive approach towards things that are negative, such as fascism, racism. While these are the things that we can never accept. Again, there was another objection. If we accept this school of thought, we will ask the supporters of this school of thought as to whether they are relativists or absolutists. If they say they are absolutists, then they will negate their own theory. They will object to their own theory. And if they say they are relativists, then their claim will not be useful. We also raised other arguments, but I will suffice to mentioning this, and I will also mention that according to Islam, cultural relativism is not acceptable. Islam is absolutist, but Islam makes some sort of concisions, and these concisions can be termed as some kind of relativism. But the relativism supported by Islam is quite different from the relativism supported by the West. Thank you very much.